I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Senator Chuck Grassley, head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, is set Monday as the date for Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford to testify publicly or privately before his committee that is deciding on Kavanaugh's fitness to serve on the U.S. Supreme Court. As you surely know by now, Blasey Ford has accused Kavanaugh of sexually assaulting her at a party when they were teenagers, something she said she told no one at the time. She relayed that information anonymously to her congresswoman this summer when she saw that Kavanaugh was on a short list for the court, who relayed it to Senator Dianne Feinstein, who relayed it to the FBI. Blasey Ford outed herself by talking to the Washington Post this past weekend when she realized her identity was going to be blown. Kavanaugh has denied the allegations. This is a fast-moving story with all sorts of political complications and implications. And we asked Scott Detrow to join us. He's a WHYY alumnus, also a congressional correspondent for NPR, co-host of the NPR Politics podcast. And Scott Detrow, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It is very exciting to be back on Radio Times. Nice. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Let me play a lightly edited clip. This is President Trump speaking yesterday on the White House lawn.
I'd really want to see her. I really would want to see what she has to say. But I want to give it all the time they need. They've already given it time. They've delayed a major hearing. There's no more just about. Look, I would say this. I think he's an extraordinary man. I think he's a man of great intellect, as I've been telling you. And he has an unblemished record. This is a very tough thing for him and his family. And we want to get it over with. At the same time, we want to give tremendous amounts of time. If she shows up, that would be wonderful. If she doesn't show up, that would be unfortunate.
Scott, do we know what's going to happen on Monday?
We have no idea what's going to happen on Monday. You said this was a fast-moving story, and it is, but I think we are, like, in a holding pattern right now because there is posturing and negotiating happening on all sides, and I honestly don't know what's going to happen Monday. We have, I think, three possibilities. The first possibility is there is a hearing where Ford testifies in front of the Judiciary Committee. Kavanaugh testifies as well. There will be a lot of parallels to the 1991 Anita Hill Clarence Thomas hearing, which basically nobody in Washington thinks went well or was handled well. Right. Option two is that Chuck Grassley has said he could go forward with just a hearing where Kavanaugh defends himself and Ford doesn't show up. I think that's very unlikely. And option three would be the whole thing is canceled.
And at this point, Thursday morning at 9:26, no one knows, right?
That's right. We'll have a better sense tomorrow because the last communication that the Judiciary Committee had with Ford's lawyers, Grassley said that if you're going to testify Monday, we need to know by Friday morning so that we can have your opening statement and we can have information about you. So I think that's the soonest we'll have a clear indication. But, you know, I think that clip that you played from President Trump really gets at the tension that a lot of Republicans have about this. They want to look like they're seriously listening to her. They want to look like they're taking this accusation seriously. But at the same time, they're predisposed to vote for Kavanaugh and support Kavanaugh, who they want to see on the Supreme Court. And you heard both sides of those feelings and what the president was saying yesterday.
It's interesting because she and her attorney have called for the FBI to investigate her allegations. And apparently that's what the FBI does when there are nominees for the Supreme Court and other jobs as well. It doesn't look like Senator Grassley or maybe even the White House is interested in doing that. Does anyone know why?
That's right. When the FBI is involved in vetting judicial nominees, it's more of a background check type feature than a criminal investigation. And because of that, the White House has a lot of sway over whether or not this will be reopened. The FBI says it's done its job, and the Trump White House and the Department of Justice say there's nothing more for the FBI to do here. And because of that, I think it is very unlikely you could see the FBI doing more. But that's something that both Ford's lawyers and the Democrats on the committee say needs to happen because they say a committee hearing where it's he said, she said without any other corroborating information isn't fair to the witnesses and it isn't fair to the senators trying to get to the bottom of this.
And the normal procedure, I'm going to be talking with a former FBI person in a couple of minutes here, but the normal procedure, Scott, is it's the White House that then asks the FBI to investigate. And I guess in many ways, because Kavanaugh is their client.
Yeah. And the key difference so far between what happened with Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill and what's happening now is that in 1991, the Bush White House did ask the FBI to further look into this information. As Chuck Grassley and others have pointed out, all of that happened before it became public, before our colleague Nita Totenberg broke the story of Anita Hill and she became a nationally known name. And that's the exact situation that it seems like Ford wanted to avoid. And that's why Dianne Feinstein kept this information private for so long, this exact situation of the president of the United States talking about her, of her name in every newscast, and the idea of sitting in front of the Judiciary Committee being questioned on national TV.
And apparently she has faced harassments and death threats, and I'm not sure if she has gone into hiding, but clearly fears for her safety.
Yeah, that's what her lawyers have said. She spoke to the Washington Post over the weekend, and since then we have heard nothing from her other than statements from her lawyers and this letter that her lawyer sent to the Judiciary Committee.
Now, Senator Feinstein has come under some criticism for how she handled this information. What are the critics saying?
They are saying that, if you listen to what Democrats are saying right now, this is extremely troubling. This needs to be investigated seriously. We need to take the time to get to the bottom of this. And Republicans are saying, okay, well, Dianne Feinstein had this information for about 5 weeks and kept it to herself. She didn't share it with Chuck Grassley. She didn't ask Kavanaugh about it when they met one-on-one. She didn't bring it up in the private executive sessions that senators had to look into the Kavanaugh nomination. Feinstein says that she did that because she was trying to respect Ford, who had shared that information but said she didn't want to go public, didn't want her name out there, that she wanted to keep this a private matter. Feinstein was trying to balance a lot of different things at once, and she's being blasted by President Trump and Republicans, and frankly, a lot of Democrats are frustrated as well that she kept this critical information to herself for so long. But Feinstein repeatedly says, I was trying to honor an important request from a woman who says she was sexually assaulted, and that is a very important thing to do.
So she did not even share that with any Democrats on the committee or any Democrats anywhere?
No, she shared it with other Democrats last week on Wednesday and, proving her concerns. By Thursday, there was a news report about it. By Friday, all the information was public. And over the weekend, Ford came public, seeming to think, my name's going to get that out there anyway. I might as well talk to reporters myself.
Does anyone know who leaked her name? Or was it just a matter of kind of drip, drip and connecting the dots?
I think, as is often the case in Congress, once the information is shared from several senators' staffs, it's going to get out there to the press one way or another. It's not sure where that information came from. Republicans are painting this as a strategic leak by Democrats. It's not quite clear where that information came from. First in a publication called The Intercept, and then The New Yorker had a broader report on these allegations.
Going back to 1991, and we'll be talking about that even later in this show today, Scott. Do the Republicans, though, especially Republicans on the committee, have a problem in that they are all males? And if she shows up, the kind of potential for a spectacle?
Absolutely. They sure do. There are 11 Republicans on the committee, and they are all men. Democrats, there's 4 Democrats on the committee. And that's one difference from 1991, where it was an entirely male panel questioning Anita Hill and clearly very skeptical of her claims and her credibility. And, one thing that I've been saying and thinking about is that the Me Too movement has been kind of a reality check as to how far society has and has not come. And I think the United States Senate is surprised to find itself able to test that in real time. Will they handle this better than they did in 1991? I'd say one, obviously I was not there in 1991, but I'd say one difference from the coverage at the time and what I saw in the hallways this week was that Republicans were incredibly careful early in the week to not attack Ford, to not question Ford, to say these are serious allegations and we want to take a look, and either not commenting at all or commenting very carefully. You did not see her attacked. Orrin Hatch did at one point say something early on saying this woman seems like she may have troubles or something like that, but he backtracked from that statement, and there has not been the type of character assassination that you saw during the Anita Hill hearings.
Interestingly, Kellyanne Conway said this woman should not be insulted and she should not be ignored.
Yeah, and I think that all being said, there has been an interesting shift over the last few days where Republicans are starting to indicate they still do support Kavanaugh. And maybe a hearing would change that. Maybe more facts would change that. But one thing that got a lot of attention is a top staffer to Chuck Grassley, who's one of the staffers in charge of vetting nominees, tweeted last night, "We will confirm Judge Kavanaugh." And this is one of the people who's supposed to be taking this allegation seriously. That's caused a lot of backlash. And Democrats are saying, is this just a done deal? Is this just a show before you vote for him? It's all unclear right now.
Well, and I wonder, too, whether the committee has a problem in that when it came to finding someone to fill Scalia's seat, there was no urgency. And now today, there is urgency to get Kavanaugh appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, in the end, the thing that controls things more than anything else is who has the votes. And right now, Republicans have control of the Senate. They have it by the slimmest of margins, 51-49. That's one reason why there's a hearing, because Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, did not want a hearing. Chuck Grassley did not want a hearing, but they can't afford to lose more than one vote. And it was clear that enough Republicans said, no, we need to hit pause and have a hearing, that their hand was forced. But Republicans control the floor. They were able to just avoid a vote on Merrick Garland. They want Kavanaugh appointed before the beginning of the fall term. And they want Kavanaugh appointed this term because there's an increasing chance. It's still not the most likely outcome, but there's a realistic possibility Democrats could take back control over the Senate.
The Senate.
And it's an increasing possibility. Again, it's not a likely outcome, but if you look at a lot of Republican-controlled seats in Tennessee, in Arizona, in Nevada, there is a pathway there that I think wasn't the case before. So Republicans are a little nervous that if Democrats somehow got control of the Senate, if somehow Judge Kavanaugh had to withdraw his nomination, Democrats would be very inclined to do the same thing and just not fill a seat for a long period of time because Republicans had done it.
And how much, about a minute or so, Scott, before we have to say goodbye to you, but how much pressure then on Collins and Murkowski, both senators, both women? I know that Collins was interviewed on a radio show yesterday and seemed to tip her hand there.
They are the two most important votes in the Senate. They're used to that pressure. They were the two most important votes on health care, where they ultimately defeated the effort to repeal Obamacare. And they were the two critical votes on the tax overhaul, which they voted for and helped pass. They're used to that position. They're used to this this case where there's 50 reporters surrounding them in the hallway asking for quotes, as was the case earlier this week. Collins is still indicating she would really love Ford to testify. But Ford has listed her concerns, and it's not clear whether she's going to change her mind.
Well, to be continued. And Scott Detrow, a great pleasure to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It was really nice to be here. Thanks for having
me. You're very welcome. And again, that's Scott Detrow. He's congressional correspondent for NPR, co-host of the NPR Politics podcast, and was a reporter here at WHYY before moving on to NPR. We have Ron Husko waiting in the wings, a former assistant director of the FBI. We'll be talking with him about how these FBI investigations go. 1-888-477-9499. Radio Times at WHYY.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Well, it looks like there's a showdown set for this Monday. That's the day that Senator Chuck Grassley, head of the Judiciary Committee, is set to hear testimony from Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford about what happened more than 30 years ago at a party when they were both teenagers. She has alleged that he sexually assaulted her and has also said the FBI should investigate before she testifies. The FBI has done background checks on Kavanaugh several times, including for the U.S. Supreme Court, but not about these charges, which he does deny. Anita Hill spoke on ABC's Good Morning America this week about the importance of the FBI investigating Blasey Ford's allegations.
Absolutely, it's the right move. The hearing questions need to have a frame, and the investigation is the best frame for that, a neutral investigation that can pull together the facts, create a record so that the senators can draw on the information they receive to develop their questions.
We asked Ron Husko to join us, former assistant director of the FBI, currently president of the Law Enforcement Defense Fund. Ron Husko, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's good to be with you.
Are we in uncharted waters in that there is a call from an accuser to reopen an investigation of someone for the U.S. Supreme Court?
I don't know that the waters are entirely uncharted. Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas's confirmation gives us some sense that of deja vu, I guess you'd say.
Right.
This is certainly the sort of investigation where the FBI's work could be called into action. They've done the background investigation on the candidate to date. It is for the FBI. It would not be a criminal investigation. It would be part of a background investigation. So there's no real need for the FBI to open a separate criminal investigative file. In fact, I think it would not fit within their guidelines to do so. So it's purely a background investigation. They have capable investigators. It could be done with the right cooperation. It could be done very, very quickly and have the information in the Senate committee's hands, I would think, by Saturday morning, if they were so inclined.
You're saying in 2 days, by this Saturday morning, they could actually have, if they got the green light, which they haven't, that the FBI could have the information that would help the Senate Judiciary Committee?
I think so. Look, we're talking about a finite set of facts or allegations, essentially involving three people in the room. Two of whom have already made denials. So really we're talking about fleshing out the information from the accuser. And if it were me, as the person involved in directing the agents on what to do, among the things I'd want to know very quickly was, who else was there?
Mm-hmm.
What other people can you name? You know, describe the circumstances. Is there any other fact witness to your presence at this party, to their presence at this party, others who might have had a conversation or would be in a position to recall the party, the circumstances about your arrival, your departure, the fact that she might have been upset and fled the scene afterward, who she might have talked to immediately afterward and shared this information about the incident. I think the FBI could wrap that up pretty quickly in a way to inform the Senate committee.
But we are talking about about something that happened, 36 years ago. Does anyone, whatever age these two people are, remember a party when they were 15 or 17 years old? I mean, clearly she does, because she says she was sexually assaulted at that party. But I'm thinking about the people that might have been to that party and might have observed something.
That's a very fair question, and I think would be among the questions that the FBI would have if they were told to, execute this mission.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I will admit to having been a 15 or 17-year-old at a high school party, several decades ago, and could I tell you, oh, yes, I remember that party? Maybe,
mm-hmm.
But I would say less and less likely with every passing year. Unless there was something momentous that really seared it in your brain. And maybe for one person that is the case, but that's why you have an investigation.
Let me ask you a procedural question. I put this also to Scott Detrow, our NPR reporter who got us started. In terms of procedure, it's really up to the White House to ask the FBI to investigate what happened at this party 36 years ago. Do I have that correct?
You do. So the FBI has this, very broad mission. This case, what we're talking about here, is not a criminal FBI criminal investigation. It is not an FBI-led national security investigation. There's no predication for either one of those. The FBI is, in effect, a contractor for the White House. The White House is the client. The client gets to set the terms and ask the FBI to do this background investigative work. Which I think has largely been completed. Now there's a new allegation that would presumably, need them to go back to dig deeper into a specific area. And until the client asks for that work to be done, the FBI is not trying to usurp that role. And as I heard Chuck Grassley put it, I think accurately, they're not trying to commandeer this investigation either on the Senate side. The White House has proffered a nominee. The background work needs to be completed, and it's up to the White House to kind of take that next step if they choose to.
I do want to read some comments here, but let me just quote something that the president said on Tuesday, and this is about the FBI. He said, and I'm quoting here, "I don't think the FBI really should be involved because they don't want to be involved. If they wanted to be, I would certainly do that. But as you know, they say this is really not their thing." Is the president correct about that?
I don't think so. Look, he's the chief executive. The FBI is an executive agency. The FBI does this very work that we're talking about. They would certainly rush to do it. These are regarded as special investigations by the FBI, typically with very short deadlines, with lots of people engaged in the review process. They would, of course, do it. They would, of course, do it very, very quickly. So I think that the president, his comments, I think, play into, my belief that what we're talking about here is three-dimensional chess. Mm-hmm. There is the factual piece of it, and there's also the political piece of it that's playing out. There's the PR and media piece of it. And there's a lot of moving parts, some of which we're expected not to see. This is a part of it.
And, of course, these partisan times, we know that President Trump has criticized the FBI. He said recently, "I have no attorney general," even though Jeff Sessions still has his job. Does that, just the intensity and the partisanship, does that complicate whatever the FBI may or may not do?
I think it does before the FBI is asked to do it. Once they're asked to do it, they will do their work I think quickly, effectively, efficiently, and their work can certainly be tested in its apolitical nature when this witness, the accuser, if she chooses to testify in an open hearing, mm-hmm. The questions that are posed by senators would very likely be similar to what was already posed by the FBI, and all of us can potentially assess her credibility and her recollection. I don't think the questions here are particularly hard. They're made harder, I think, in ways that because they are being, they would be posed by, men, older men on the Senate committee, in during the Me Too movement.
Yep.
There's certainly some tenderness about how you ask the question. Are you asking it in a way that somehow discredits the accuser? But I think, these are important questions that ought to be asked. There's certainly a professional way to ask them. If she's inclined to sit for a public hearing, we can all kind of assess, okay, what should she have recalled? Mm-hmm. Does it have the ring of truth? And then, of course, the challenge on the other side is, if you're the nominee, how do you defend yourself? How do you somehow prove a negative? If all you can say is, "I didn't do that, I don't recall this." How do you prove the negative? How do you unring a bell that's clearly been rung?
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Ron Hosko, former assistant director of the FBI, currently president of the Law Enforcement Defense Fund, and the second of three guests in this hour of Radio Times talking about what the country is talking about. The fact that this Monday, Senator Chuck Grassley, who heads up the Judiciary Committee, has said that will be the day for testimony from Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford about an incident that happened some 36 years ago. She has alleged that he sexually assaulted her at this party that they both attended, and it has raised a whole host of political and legal and constitutional and psychological questions as well. Let me read a couple of comments here, one from Rick. What is the statute of limitations for anyone to come forward and make this kind of claim? I'll put that to you, Ron. I mean, obviously, whatever happens on Monday, that is not a courtroom, but what about the statute of limitations?
Yeah, typically, I think you'll find that the statute of limitations, there are federal statutes of limitations that tend to be, for most crimes, about 5 years. At the local level, the same. It would differ from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Here, I understand we may be talking about Montgomery County, Maryland. Mm-hmm. I think the statute of limitations was probably long past there. And again, we're not talking about a federal prosecution. We're talking or a local prosecution. We're talking about allegations that bear on the suitability of a nominee for the Supreme Court. So I think A, we would be beyond any statute of limitations. B, we're not talking about a prosecution. So it's not precisely, although it's an important question, it's not precisely a statute of limitations and prosecution issue.
Here's an email from Jen who says, I was sexually abused. You never forget even the tiny details, such as the wall outlet that I fixated on or the length of my hair at the time. The actual touch still wakes me up at night and I throw myself out of bed to get away. I would love to forget. And I think this incident, as the Me Too and other incidents have really for many people just dredged up really disturbing memories of what happened to them and the trauma of trying to deal with it now that things are more out in the open. Any thoughts to that, Ron Huskell?
Well, first, I feel for victims like Jen and certainly thousands of others. So look, sexual assault is a reality in America, and where it can be prosecuted, it should be prosecuted. So I think this is part of the challenge of not just if FBI investigators, if they're requested, but for the senators, how do I look like I am respectful of what may have happened here and not discrediting a witness who's chosen to come forward at a critical time, at a pivotal time? How do I do that in the right way? So I am carrying that off as a man, as an older man, questioning a woman, about an experience that she says happened 35 or 30-some years ago. That's in the hard-to-do category.
Sure. Let me read some more. And this is a different point of view from Patrick, who says, Blasey's quote-unquote story has so many holes in it that I wonder if it would stand up in court. Why wait 30-some-odd years? Why not tell your best friend, your parents, the police? I think Judge Kavanaugh is innocent. And of course, this is something that has divided so many, has divided the country. And in many ways, though, Ron, we don't know what happened. We were not there. We do not know what happened.
That I think is the challenge of where we all are today. And it's from my perspective, look, we tried to in 30 years of FBI work, you try to work based on the facts. And we are, to me, pre-decisional. We don't know the facts right now. We have an allegation and two denials. And so I think it's incumbent on all of us, whether you're a senator, whether you're media commentator. I just saw a piece being played by comments by a woman on The View who's already got her opinion. We ought to wait till the facts are developed and then assess those facts and assess credibility based on the facts that are adduced at the time, rather than all of us rushing to some sort of judgment. I think we all ought to just have some sense of what's due process look like in America, and that's the right of the accused to have a fair hearing as well. Here we have a prominent federal judge who's been accused. We have an accuser. Let's give them both a sense of, fairness and due process. And that ought to include not coming to a conclusion before we've heard any scintilla of fact.
What do you make of the fact that she apparently, according to the Washington Post, told her therapist, this was back, I believe, in 2012, about this incident that she describes that happened. She also apparently passed a polygraph test. I know that's not admissible in court. And she has also asked for the FBI to investigate. The fact that she has been she didn't do this 36 years ago, but the fact that she's been proactive on this now, does that tell us anything?
Well, I think it tends to suggest that this is not a newly created storyline, that if that is true, that she relayed this incident to a therapist or others 5 years ago or 2 decades ago or 3 decades ago, that all adds to the notion that she has this recollection and belief, and perhaps if she's in therapy, that it somehow damaged her or scarred her. I think that's all relevant to at least rebut the notion that she created this idea in July of this year when Kavanaugh's name started to surface for a Supreme Court justice position. I think it's valuable and relevant information.
Can the Judiciary Committee subpoena her if she is reluctant to testify?
Yeah, I think the the judiciary can subpoena folks that they want to subpoena, you always face, and certainly this is much more delicate when you're talking about a potential victim, but also delicate when you're talking about a potential witness like Mr. Judge, I think that's his name,
right, the friend.
who through an attorney is saying, I have no recollection or no knowledge of this, or it didn't happen, and he's telegraphing, I think, that he doesn't want to be sitting in front of this committee. So I think how they approach this is going to be very important in the next few days. Hopefully, I know this accuser has said she doesn't want to be part of a media circus. Well, we're already there.
Yep.
The music has started for the media circus. And, you know, how we tame that is going to be very, very challenging for the Senate and I think for the president.
And I think for the country as well. Ron, we're almost out of time here, but an email from Paul who says Kavanaugh is a judge and officer of the court. He should be demanding a full FBI investigation of Ford's claim and the death threats that she is receiving. What are your thoughts in 30 seconds or less?
Yeah, you know, you have somebody, a judge, a sitting judge, who you know, is going to be judge-like, I think, for the most part, and sit back and say, let the process work. I'm the candidate. I'm the nominee. I'm a part of the process, but let others decide on what that process is going to be. There's plenty of people to speak for the judge. Probably right now, silence is the best course of action for him, as there are plenty of folks taking up the charge on both sides. So I don't know that the judge needs to be too loud on this at this time.
Well, I appreciate you joining us on Radio Times and sharing your thoughts and observations. Ron Hosko, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Marty.
And he's former assistant director of the FBI, also president, or I should say currently president, of the Law Enforcement Defense Fund. We have Carol Tracy waiting in the wings, executive director of the Women's Law Project based here in Philadelphia. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times.
Are you a scorned woman? Do you have a martyr complex?
No, I don't.
You testified that you drew an inference that Judge Thomas might want you to look at pornographic films.
That was the inference that I drew, yes, pressing me for social engagement, yes.
That something he might have wanted you to do, but the fact is, flatly, he never asked you to look at pornographic movies with him. You testified this morning in response to Senator Biden that the most embarrassing question involved, this is not too bad, women's large breasts, that's a word we use all the time. That was the most embarrassing aspect of what Judge Thomas had said to you.
As a practical matter, if Mr. Thomas was doing all these things that Professor Hill accuses him of, he wouldn't have been doing them just with her. It would be a weakness that would come out in conversations.
That's Senators Howard Heflin of Alabama, Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, and Chuck Grassley of Iowa questioning Anita Hill back in 1991. She testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee, accusing U.S. Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas of sexual harassment, and we know how that turned out. Now in 2018, we're involved in a similar controversy involving Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford, who was accused Kavanaugh of sexual assault more than 30 years ago when they were teenagers. A hearing is set for this Monday, although it's not clear what is going to happen. We asked Carol Tracy to join us. She is executive director of the Women's Law Project, which is based here in Philadelphia, and I'm sure was a guest on Radio Times when we talked about the Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas testimony before the Judiciary Committee. Carol, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here.
Have we learned anything since 1991?
I think we've learned a lot. Many of us have learned a lot. I think we've learned about the prevalence of sexual assault. We've learned about how rape victims, sexual assault victims, continue to be profiled as liars. But we've also learned that women are standing up and saying, no, They have told their experiences. The Me Too movement has been an extraordinary cascading event of horrible experiences that women have had throughout their life all over the country. So I think that we talk about it more. Hopefully, some of the behavior associated with it has changed. And I think that society is better informed about it. But why, in this instance, we don't want to know what happened is what is extraordinary.
I mean, it sounds like you're saying what our previous guest said, a former assistant director of the FBI, which is, let's have an FBI investigation into what happened.
It's absurd not to go through the process, even the process that Congress and the White House went through in 1991 with Anita Hill. So there's no reason not to do it. There's no reason to not delay a hearing. For God's sake, the Supreme Court vacancy existed for 10 months between 2016 and 2017. A few more weeks, even as your previous guest said, a few days even to find this out, because the truth is they don't want to know because they don't care.
You think so?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I think what's interesting, if my memory serves me well, when the FBI did investigate Anita Hill's allegations, they did not confirm them.
They didn't. And they may not be able to confirm this. But there's no reason not to have the investigation. There's no reason, frankly, if I were Judge Kavanaugh, I'd want to have my name cleared somewhat if I could. But certainly, there's no reason for this woman to experience the kind of character assassination that Anita Hill did. There's no reason for her to be living under death threats now, because she's come forward with a memory, actually, of an incident far more serious than the incidents that were alleged about Clarence Thomas. I mean, she's talking about an intentional, violent, strategic attack on her body, and an attack that engendered significant fear in her and that she has lived with for years.
Senator Grassley has said, at least as it stands this morning, that he was willing to have either a public or a private hearing with Blasey Ford and also with Kavanaugh. Do you think, does the public have a right to know what she has alleged and what he says in response?
I think it's very important to air this more thoroughly than it has been now. I mean, this has been leaked. She has tried to be confidential. You know, it's such an amazing process, because her process is so similar to what we have been hearing for the last 2 years, time and time again. Undoubtedly, starting with victim blaming, then trying to suppress the memory, and it won't go away for her. So, you know, the FBI can go back and look to see where the party was. If there was a party, who else might have been there, as your former guest said, to either enhance her credibility or to detract from her credibility? But why not? Mm. Why not? It makes that in and of itself might not lead to a firm conclusion about anything, but at least it will have happened.
We played some of the clips, and we could have gone on some of the clips of some of the questions put before Anita Hill. The Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee, they're all men, all white men, I believe. Is there anything untoward about men asking women about allegations of sexual assault? You're a lawyer. I'm assuming this happens in courtrooms across America.
Of course it does. I mean, that's exactly what happens. But there's a period of investigation. One doesn't just go before a tribunal. There's a police investigation. And interestingly enough, the police today many of them were being trained on things called the neurobiology of trauma to understand the traumatic impact of a sexual assault. There's a desire to have everyone behave exactly the same in a stereotypical fashion. And When that doesn't happen, then the credibility of the person is under attack, as the credibility of this woman is under attack. She didn't want to come forward. She'd like to get rid of this memory. She can't get rid of this memory. And let's find out more about it. And again, these questions about statutes of limitations, this isn't a criminal prosecution.
Right.
It's connected to a character of a person who is now alleged to have done something very violent.
I was just going to say, one of the explanations that I've heard in defense of Kavanaugh is, if this is true and no one else comes forward, we're talking about a 17-year-old, again, assuming it's true, a drunken 17-year-old sexually assaulting a woman. Nothing happened since then. A number of women who have worked with Kavanaugh, I think 65 women, have written a letter saying he's an upstanding fellow. We've never had problems with him. How important is that? If it doesn't help her situation, obviously, but does that tell us anything about Kavanaugh?
Well, I mean, it tells us something. And I think we know that there's a juvenile system. There's an understanding that juveniles, if for example, there was an investigation when this occurred, he would have been investigated as a juvenile. The juvenile system recognizes and increasingly recognizes, because we now know so much more about brain development. He would not, if he were at 17, if all of this was found to be true, he wouldn't have been put in jail. He might have been put in a detention facility. He would have gotten treatment. The point of would have been rehabilitation. On the other hand, if he was an adult, he could have faced 5 to 10 years in jail. We know much more about adolescent brain development, and we know so much more about the neurobiology of trauma and how it impacts individuals who have been traumatized. And we also know that not every 17-year-old drunk boy sexually assaults.
Absolutely.
And that I think is a critical factor here.
Let me read some comments. An email from Doug. Will Kavanaugh's statements regarding his own behavior, blackout in college, what happens at Georgetown Prep, stays at Georgetown Prep, something that he said, I believe, at an event at Georgetown Prep, saying basically, and we're glad that what happens here stays here. Are any of those incriminating?
Well, I don't know that in and of themselves they are, but it's certainly part of a culture, and a culture that certainly entitled boys and men to actually commit various kinds of abuse and vandalism and other behavior for which they were not held accountable.
I'm trying to imagine certain scenarios. One where Christine Blasey Ford goes before the Senate Judiciary Committee, one would assume that if she comes, behind her would be her posse of supporters and friends. The other scenario I'm trying to imagine is, if this did happen, Kavanaugh saying, I did a terrible thing. I was a young man. I've tried to change my life since then. Trying to imagine how those scenarios would play out in today's environment.
Well,
I don't know.
No, I don't think any of us know the answer to that. But certainly an acknowledgement and an apology would not be a bad thing. I mean, whether that would in and of itself either qualify him or disqualify him, I would suggest that it might show more character than not. The denial of being at a party when the party hasn't even been identified yet suggests that he's doubled down on this. So I think that the importance of having an investigation. But the times we're living in right now are so abnormal
and fraught, right?
And fraught, and issues of due process, issues of the appropriate rule of law, issues of democracy, issues of government are just being thrown away. And this hearing and this nomination is coming to symbolize that.
Do you think this whatever happens, that the Supreme Court is hurt by this?
Oh, I think the Supreme Court, I think the rule of law is hurt by this. Absolutely. I think the role of government, we know that Senator Hatch in 1991 was very clear. Absolutely, there needs to be an FBI investigation about Hill's allegations. So why not now? Hmm. What has changed? In fact, what has changed is we know so much more about the prevalence of sexual assault. We know so much more about why these stories aren't told, why these experiences continue to haunt individuals, as Dr. Blasey Ford is describing. We know that to be true in many, many circumstances.
Let me read some more comments. We have an email from Ryan. It seems to me that in this misogynistic culture we live in, that she has to prove that he did it instead of him proving that he didn't. Sexism and politics go hand in hand. I mean, who has to prove what under these circumstances?
This has been what has been historically true in dealing with sexual assault and rape. And that is, the emphasis is always on the character of the victim and not on the accused. So women have to disprove that they are lying. That is what most of the culture says. And I honestly believe that we are in the midst of a significant culture shift. And it seems to me that the men on the Judiciary Committee haven't noticed that. And my guess is how this is handled will have future ramifications.
Let me read some more comments. One from Ron. People wonder why she has not told people in all these years. We only have to look at the victims of the priest who did not feel that they could come forward for many years. Not an unusual situation. An email from Mike. At this point, all that needs to be demonstrated is an investigation, is that something happened. If it did, Kavanaugh's categorical denial is a lie, just like Bill Clinton's. And obviously, you know, there are various iterations of what we are talking about.
There's no question about that. And I think that, I mean, the rush to deny this before even knowing anything, I mean, I think that he has put himself in a very awkward situation, particularly if his friends' allegations about their drunkenness and partying that took place are accurate, and one suspects that his best friend is depicting an accurate culture, at least, of the time of the boys at Georgetown Prep, that the categorical denial at this point is very troubling.
Almost out of time here, Carol Tracy, where, if anywhere, do you see this going? Or do we not know?
I have great concern that, quite frankly, even if there were a videotape, that they would still push forward, because I think we are living in an era where the means justifies the end, and they don't really care what she has to say.
Because I would say at their peril.
I hope at their peril, but it is at our peril, because this Supreme Court is the court of the future, and this is the court that is going to be ruling on women's reproductive health, issues around bodily integrity, personal autonomy, and we're going to be stuck with that for quite a long while.
Well, Carol Tracy, as always, thank you for coming in and joining us today on Radio Times. She is the executive director of the Women's Law Project, based here in Philadelphia. The third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. Send us an email. Tell us what you think of Radio Times, radiotimes@whyy.org. Al Banks and Mike Villers, the engineers for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.